Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Female Voices in E-commerce podcast. My name is Chana, and I'm the founder of Owl & Monk, an e-commerce consultancy in Southern Sydney. I work one-on-one with business owners on their e-commerce strategy, website design, and development. Using the right online tools and systems, we make the lives of business owners easier and create personalized e-commerce solutions that help them to sell their products effectively online. I'm also the co-founder of the Shopify Women's Network, an online community designed to empower women to confidently use Shopify to grow their brands. This is a podcast for women looking to take their idea to the world and want the knowledge, inspiration, and connection to build a business that they love. Listen to our podcast series to hear the voices of female founders, entrepreneurs, and advocates who share their stories, experiences, and strategies on how to run a successful retail business. I hope you enjoy the show.
So welcome, Sophie and Eloise, to the first in-person recording of the Female Voices in E-commerce podcast. Thank you so much for inviting me out today to your home and your showroom out here in Exeter, which is 2 hours south of Sydney in a beautiful regional village of approximately 1,000 people. So I wanted to set the scene for everyone listening because the sun has just come out. We've had a little bit of a drizzly morning. We've got these beautiful green rolling hills, farmland and bush. And it's just a really nice place to unwind with a beautiful creative and foodie culture. Cool.
Great. Thanks so much for having us.
No worries. Pleasure. So I've been lucky to interview the two of you in the past as part of the Shopify Women's Network quarterly meetups. So it's great to actually be able to meet you in person and continue the chat. As I feel like you've got a lot of value that you can share with our listeners. So before I get started, I just wanted to say a little bit about this town, Exeter. So it's quite an old, humble region. There's some beautiful old English-style estates, as well as a Celtic-looking church made out of stone dated back from 1896. And one interesting thing that I've learned about Exeter is that they've got their own croquet club. So I'm curious, do you girls play?
We don't. The croquet courts in Exeter are probably the most beautiful or beautifully maintained croquet courts probably in the world. They are often full of locals. We do, however, play tennis in the at the tennis courts right next door.
We do. And we frequent the general store for our coffees and our...
Yeah, it looks very
and
good.
And our mail.
Yeah. It's don't quite a community mail, hub, so which is nice, the general really store. Nice. So there's about 4 shops in Exeter, I think. And, the general store is pretty much the centre of the universe.
Centre of the universe.
Yeah.
I think.
Amazing. And then you also have a market there.
Yeah. So on the first Saturday of every month, there's the Exeter Village Markets, which is right next to the Croquet Club. And it's really fun. There's lots of local makers and great food. We have our products there once a month to see all the local people and people that are traveling to the Southern Highlands. A different vibe to other places as well. Like, it's not the coast, it's not the city, it's really just a nice example of regional living.
Mm. Lots of horses and cows and chickens.
Mm. Yeah, lots of places to walk, and there's nice shops and great coffee, and everyone's just really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's what happens when you're with a community. It's like everyone knows each other. Everyone has that little bit of time that they can actually say g'day and actually have a proper chat with you. So
yeah,
I imagine it's hard to kind of, get something quick from the shops and come home.
Yeah, I mean,
I think we're lucky because we're on 5 acres.
Yeah,
okay. We tend to spend a lot of time at home just because of there's so much to do, looking after the chickens. We've got the apple orchard that we have to... It's hard.
Yeah, amazing.
It's very lovely, but we could definitely stay busy in the garden.
I can imagine. To get started, why don't you tell me a bit more about Elf Ceramics?
Yeah, sure. So Elf Ceramics, we specialize in designing and handcrafting contemporary ceramic homewares. So we started our business in 2016 as a retail store. In Paddington, and we retailed our own pieces sort of in limited quantities, and then a range of other ceramic makers, and then just under 2 years ago, we decided to redesign our core collection, and now we manufacture all of that here in Exeter on our property. And we've now become an e-commerce based business after we closed our store during COVID last year.
Wow, what's happened the last 2 years?
Lots of changes, lots of pivoting, for want of a better word. Yeah.
But it is, and you've stayed relevant as well. So, you know, it's quite a hard time in retail with all the closures in Australia in particular. So, you know, Paddington is kind of this hub of, you know, activity and shopping for the suburban bohemian, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So it would have been a really challenging time for you to actually run that physical business there. Do you want to tell me a little bit more about that challenge of actually making that decision to close the store and come down here?
Yeah. I guess the decision was both from a lifestyle perspective, and from a business perspective. So we started our Paddington store as a bit of a passion project. Eloise is a trained ceramic artist. And so it kind of started as somewhere for us to sell her pieces, and then also
other pieces
that we love, and like other Australian ceramicists, and it was really lovely and we really enjoyed it, but then
selling individual pieces has a lot of admin, and so we found ourselves just bogged down in admin, and you kind of don't have that consistency, especially when you want to add an e-commerce site. You have to photograph every individual piece. Once you've sold it, it's gone. And so it was very thrilling as a ceramic artist to have that in the store. But I didn't have much time in the studio, and I just couldn't work out how to have enough time to put everything online as well, because having a physical store, you're limited to who comes in the door. And yeah, and it's a little hard to get to Paddington sometimes if you're not local.
Yeah, definitely. And I think when we started really mapping out the business and what we wanted it to be and sort of how we wanted it to fit within our lifestyle, the store and its pain points started to make less and less sense. So 2 years ago when we decided to focus purely on our own range, so like redesigning it and working out what that was going to be and how we were going to manufacture it. We started looking at larger premises. And my suggestion was Marrickville or sort of like the inner west, like somewhere in Sydney that was near the store that kind of fit, because we were both living in Paddington at the time. And Elle found this property in Exeter and said, well, I've always wanted to live in the country. What do you think? It's got a big shed.
It's got a big shed for the studio. It's got a big shed for the kilns.
And I thought, well, okay. Like all our decisions, I think once Elle's made up her mind, it's, you know, we make it work.
It was another passion project.
Yeah, another sort of passion project. So I thought, okay, well, we'll make this work. I did a lot of commuting from Paddington, and I was very much, you know, Paddington local, and I loved the space and the vibe and all that kind of thing. And then I started spending more and more time down here. And then fell in love with the Southern Highlands, surprising to everyone.
And we also realised that it's nice to work together, physically work together. I think everyone's sort of, in the past few years, realised that either they really work well together or not together. But you can finally work it out. And I think we really worked out that unless we're physically working together, because ceramics is such a physical job and you just need an extra set of hands sometimes, or if you're trying to, you know, even answering interview questions, you kind of need someone to bounce your ideas off, and constantly being on the phone, you never knew, because our internet was terrible. We couldn't Zoom. We could only be on the phone all the time. So you couldn't work out if someone was really busy and, you know, had their hands covered in clay, or if the other person was out and about. We just couldn't work that out. It wasn't like, oh, well, we're both at our desks and we're both talking to each other. It was kind of like, you could be in all these different scenarios. And so we found that working together was just, it changed, we got so much more done working together and helping each other out. It was not quite as simple as being like, well, you know, I make the ceramics, you sell the ceramics. There's a lot more crossover than that. And it just really led us, and we realized that it's not worth how much time you lose and how much gain you lose not being together.
Yeah,
it's really interesting because it just shows how important like your particular business is to be working physically at the same premises to be productive.
Definitely.
You know, like there's some business models which, yes, will work purely online remotely, that's fine, but I think with anything that's tactile, like producing ceramics, it's really important that the two of you are in each other's premises, you know, only, you know, what do you call it, a stone throw away from each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think
also having our stock in the same place was very important.
Yeah, that would be much easier to manage.
The amount of counting you have to do.
Yeah, you'd be doing stock takes every day.
I'd be like, how many do you have? How many do you have?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
But I think the really interesting thing as well is that since working together in the same space and being here together, we've been able to create a really cohesive business, and I think we've been able to shape it much more meaningfully than we would have been able to separately, because we were never really on the same page. And I think that came from, I guess, a lack of understanding from my part on what actually went into making ceramics. And since actually being in the studio with Elle all the time, I could help as well, like bring my manufacturing knowledge and sort of start setting up processes, and then also, you know, now I help make some of the things. So I have much more of an understanding of how the manufacturing side works so that we can shape our business strategy around it. I was trying to make manufacturing fit a business model that I had in my mind. And so by changing, I guess, the way that...
Well, it meant that I didn't feel like I was constantly trying to keep up with the sales. It wasn't because Surf's very good at selling the products, but there's a certain thing with ceramics that if you sell too much, you get this huge order and then you're suddenly overwhelmed and you can't make anything. You kind of physically feel like, oh, if I have to make 50 plates, like I'm just going to be exhausted. I won't be able to do it. So then you shut down. And you're like, I can't make anything. I can only, I'm too overwhelmed. And so I guess if you get a huge order and you have to pack 50 plates, you'd be like, oh, that's a lot to pack. So it's kind of, I don't know. There's like a sort of, there's an amount of selling that has to merge with how much we can make. And it has to kind of grow in a way that doesn't overwhelm
either side.
Because I think I also didn't realize how much, I mean, I did, from working in the shop, I did realize how much goes into an online store. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I could not do it on my own. Couldn't sell, couldn't make, couldn't be in a shop all at the same time, especially because I'm not like an extroverted person. So it's very like, and also just switching between everything was really hard. So being away from the city and being able to be in your like creative space and make everything is kind of like having your own office and having your own space, I find is really helpful to just for focus.
So I think out of a challenge of closing the shop, you've actually created a great opportunity and a much better process for the two of you and for the business.
Definitely. It's much more
streamlined,
but also much more considered. And I think considered in ways that we maybe didn't expect.
But you don't know until you start the business. So
exactly.
The business has evolved to which version are you up to now?
Oh,
4.0, 5.0.
Yeah. Like trying to not change like 20, the plan.
20.0.
Yeah, that's the thing. And like not trying to do a thousand things at once. Mm. Just trying to do, you know, one thing really well. And then once that thing is going, you know, to plan as much as businesses can go to plan, then you start kind of building on it rather than thinking, you know, trying to reverse engineer a large company. You're just starting from what is, you know,
and trying to think more about what our customers want. It's been really interesting, like trying to make it easier for people. Like if we were going to buy our products, how do you make that easier? So you know, say reaching more people with better imagery on the internet is a better way for people to find our work. And as an artist, because I trained as an artist, you kind of, there's one way to show your work, which is kind of exhibitions. That's sort of the way you do it. You take your work to an exhibition, you make it, people buy it there. That's the only time they can buy it. That's it. Whereas sometimes when you want to shop for art or for products or anything, you don't want to have to wait for an exhibition. So that's been and it's really fun to try and work out how to make it easier for people to buy really special objects. And so, yeah, taking that physical location away from the buying has been really interesting, but then bringing it into the making has been so good.
It's a huge challenge for most online businesses on how to have that touch point, especially when you're like a top-end brand as well. Like, people see it and feel it quite often. So, but having the Paddington shop was a good opportunity for people to actually come in and look at your products. So yeah. I imagine that's created some challenges for logistics with people coming into the store. So I think the online model potentially could actually help them solve that.
There's no parking in Paddington, and ceramics are heavy and they break. People don't like buying things if you can't put them in your car. It's disappointing.
Experience. Yeah.
But it's just something that you can't get past. If you're going to buy a dinner set, you don't have to take it on the bus. You can't do it. For where we want to go, it didn't make sense.
It actually makes sense being an online business from that perspective, because you're saying that pay point. So the showroom is purely just for people to look, and then they're actually ordering online. Yeah. It's like when you go away and you go to that beautiful winery, and all of a sudden you want to buy a whole six pack.
Yeah, be like, how am I
going to
get that?
I'm going on the domestic airline budget airfare with no carry on.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's going to be awkward. Yeah. And I don't want to break it. So
yeah. Then they post it to you,
and you're like, happy days.
It's very helpful,
because I guess the whole ethos of our brand is, sharing meals and sharing moments, with people that you love and family and friends and all that kind of thing. And I think a space like this allows us to, I guess, communicate that story more than being in the store. Like, if they come here, like, they can kind of see, you know, all the products being used, like the imagery that we use on our website. You know, it's literally us having lunch in the garden with our friends.
We had a great time.
Yeah, and it's really fun. And I think
it looks
like
a tough business to run.
Oh yeah.
We were like, wow, I wish we looked like this every day.
I know. But then and I think it's really nice sort of being here and using our products as well in the way that they're meant to be used, because we are often here together, and people do visit, and you know, we'll have lunch and we'll be using a lot of products, and it'll just feel it just feels more like authentic and cohesive and
definitely the experience and the ritual you're creating with it.
Yeah.
So doing this podcast with you, I've got this beautiful little mug in my hand, which I'm holding like a little hug, you know, it's keeping me warm. It's just got that, it's got that nice feeling where, you know, the cup itself, you know, it's quite durable. It's like, it's strong, but it's also just very unique. It makes me feel nice.
Oh.
So
very nice.
Nice and relaxed.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, the joy we want to give people when they use our products. And I think they do, because of the way that they're made and they are hand thrown, you do get that real feel of the maker sort of connecting through the product. And it's interesting, like, even though, like, I use Elf products all the time, every time I use them, it's so nice.
We're always like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah, this is nice. It's really nice.
Because once, until you make enough of them, you don't actually get to use your own products that often.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because
it's a weird experience. You end up with all the ones that have tiny cracks, or the ones that aren't quite the right size,
the
or have
the handles.
The original prototype. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all the ones that end up in your house, but it's.
Yeah, but it's interesting, and even like, I've given a few of our like seconds mugs to my partner, and he loves them. He's like, oh, nice things. Like, it's nice to use nice things. And he's like, it's really different, you know, like, I shouldn't sell them out like this, but in his, you know, he's got like three old mugs that he uses. And then I gave him some of our nice ones, and he's like, there is a big difference. Like, this is really nice.
Yeah.
And so
I look at every product we send, we, you know, they're handled so many times before they leave us. So you do, it does come through. It's
nice. It's a very personal business, I think, it doesn't sort of on the surface, like, I feel like homewares, people don't see them as being deeply personal, but they're the things that you use every day.
Very intimate.
For everything, like, it is quite intimate to make things like that for people.
Mm.
At least I see it that way.
No, it absolutely is. And I think one of the challenges of e-commerce is trying to get that message across, which is why we had a nice lunch.
Yeah.
But it's really challenging, because you want to recreate that, you know, experience for people. Like, when you visit a retail space or you're sitting in the garden using the mugs, like how do you reproduce that online? Like I believe that'd probably be your biggest challenge.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then trying to, I guess, I mean, it's like everything like with online stores, like the message, well, with any brand and any branding, it's getting that message across and sort of working out like, you know, it is a very personal product or that's how we see it. So how do you get that across without it being too personal? And like, how kind of brand do you become, or like how much
do you lean into
to the individual that really personal maker.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And I think for us, one of the challenges, is presenting ourselves, particularly through mediums like Instagram. Like we're not natural as much as like I would love to be. We're not like natural Instagrammers. We're not very good.
Doesn't come very naturally.
Yeah, like I really envy the people that can just, you know, get a phone and get in front of a camera and be like, this is what we're doing today and like here it is. Like I feel like for us it's that step of, I guess, I don't know, telling our very like personal stories. It's like that kind of working out what that line is.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But your Instagram is very good. So, you know.
We work hard.
But it is. I think when it's your own business and you're creative as well, like you become a perfectionist and you have a certain vision that you want to put out to people, and it takes more methodical thinking to actually get that to communicate.
Mm. Yeah.
But from the outside, like you've nailed the Instagram. But I think your branding on a whole, like your product photography, your lifestyle photography, the way you put together the website, the social media and your email campaigns, it's all a reflection of this physical space, like the use of styling and color, you know, the natural colors, the pastels, along with the fresh food and just being with your friends and having like that entertainment space where everyone is happy and enjoying each other's company. Mm. It just, you get this sense across everything you're doing. And I think that's where I see you're doing that as a very, you're doing that the branding very well for the business.
Thank you. That's really nice.
We try very hard.
But I think like being physically located here, it did give us that. It gave us like the physical manifestation of what we always imagined our products to be. And it's definitely a lot easier to communicate when you're there.
You're living and you're breathing it. So you're not, you know, orchestrating something which is synthetic. That's not what's the reality. So this is your daily life. So it's easy to actually put that into, you know,
just
context.
Jazzed up a little.
Yeah, definitely.
No, we've got to pretend we always look like that.
No, we always get dressed up.
Yeah, we dress this every day.
Yeah, exactly. We definitely don't live in activewear and tracksuits. But, it's a really interesting and very, personal brand, I think. And I don't know, being here is really nice and enjoying our products is just... Yeah, I don't know, really special.
Because how did you go about actually planning the whole kind of style of your brand? Like, was it something very organic that's grown over time, or were you quite determined up front with how you want things to be?
Elle's an amazing ceramicist, so everything she makes is an absolute delight to use. Obviously, I'm biased, but I'm her biggest fan. But I think the range really came from... what our rituals are and what we like to use. And I think it really came from, well, what are our favorite products? How do we, you know, how do we eat meals, or how do we display flowers, or
what do you like to hold?
Yeah. What do you like to hold? Like, how do you, like, what are those like daily rituals, and like daily touch points that will create a really beautiful collection? And like, how do we interact with products? And I think, that was sort of the core of what we were thinking about.
But the very, very start, you know, we called it Elf because I was making it. I mean, it started as a side hustle for my art, and now it's sort of flipped. But, it was always designed with Soph's aesthetic in mind. So it was always designed as both of us. Like, it was never designed as sort of, oh, what's easy to make, or what do I think other people will like? It's always been...
Yeah.
What do we like? What do we like to use? What feels nice in your hands? What makes food look good? What makes coffees look good? What makes flowers look good? It's always been,
It's kind of like really sort of like beautiful. Yeah, like pieces that are beautiful on their own, but just make just enhance things in a really effortless way. Like, it's not difficult. Like, it's not difficult to make, you know, a bowl of, you know, Wednesday night pasta look like you're at a restaurant in a dinner bowl.
Yeah.
And, nice. You know, and when Elle makes coffee, and she's got very good at making coffee.
Lockdown has helped.
Yep. Yeah. Which has been amazing.
A lot of home baristas at the moment.
Yeah. But in the cuddle cups and the mugs, it looks like we're at a cafe. And I think that's something that for us...
That has been really helpful for...
Yeah, for like mental health during lockdown and things like that. But I think that's really the ethos of our brand that, you know, you have some people over for dinner and you don't want to be like, oh, what will I use? Like, you know, like, will this...
Don't want to use the special ceramics. You know? Don't want to get out of the cupboard. Like, you just... They're the ones you use every day, but they're also the ones you use to make meals special.
Yeah. Mm. And you don't want to have to think like, okay, I'm making, you know, like, whatever it is, like a risotto or something. Like, how am I going to make that look nice? Like, what plates do you think would work? Because our bowls, honestly, anything I throw in, like, in a bowl that Mel makes in any of the colours.
Doesn't matter what it is. Honestly,
like, in lockdown, when I was still in Paddington, so, like, 18 months ago, I have two of the dinner bowls. I've got one in black and one in grey. And, like, this is when I was living by myself. And, like, anything I got from Uber Eats looked amazing. I was like, oh, I'm a restaurant.
What?
Like,
restaurant?
Yeah, so it's kind of really... But then, you know... But then the dinner bowls look just as good as, like, serving dishes. Like, we had our, you know, our family down on New Year's Day, and I love to cook, and I made all of these, like, mezze plates, and I put them in dip bowls and breakfast bowls and dinner bowls, and it just... was so easy, and it just looked so
good.
Yeah, and chuck them in the dishwasher.
You chuck them in the dishwasher after, and it's just really, but it was really interesting because cooking for me is like relaxing, but also, you know, cooking is difficult enough, and then to have to, you know how to do all the plating up, it's like, it sort of takes out.
You have to be passionate and have a lot of time.
Exactly. It kind of takes that out. And I think as well, that sort of reflects like the Australian lifestyle of like, you know, easy shared meals, you know,
uncomplicated.
Yeah, just uncomplicated.
Yeah, and so that kind of led our most recent photo shoot as well. That real, your friends are over, you're having a nice time, it's a sunny day, you eat outside, that sort of thing.
And then from like, you know, the vases and the display pieces, for us, we wanted pieces that were really functional. So, you know, you go to the shops on your way home and you get a bunch of flowers.
Pop out to our garden.
Yeah, you pop out to the garden and chop a couple of things off.
Yeah, I was just looking at hydrangeas.
Yeah, exactly.
They're looking so nice.
The nice pebbles.
Yeah, they're gorgeous. But, you know, you pop out to the garden, you cut a couple of things off and they look amazing. And a bottle vase, and the bottle vase is designed that, you know, no matter where you chuck, no matter which way, you know, you chuck things in, they fall really beautifully. And I think it's that kind of, like, elevated effortlessness that really makes the range lovely to use. Yeah. And also to fit in with, you know, ceramic collections, because if you're anything like us, we have very colorful collections, and it's nice to have collecting. Things that are just effortless to display with other things.
For part of the photo shoot, we took all our things off our shelves, and then we just put our elf things in, really stylized, and we were like, this is very calming. I never really thought about how relaxed I feel, because I'm a big maximalist. I fill every shelf with everything. So it was very calming. I was like, oh, we should redesign only with Elf. Exactly. I mean, that's what we have already.
Yeah.
For sure. That's awesome. So tell us, what's your strategy for the upcoming 12 months? We've got a nice year ahead, fresh perspective. You've like removed yourself completely from technology over the holiday break. How are you feeling?
Rested for the first time in a while, which is really nice. I think, and I'm sure every business owner feels this way, is that the last 2 years have been pretty wild and full of, again, for want of a better word, pivoting. full of pivoting. So I think this year, now that we've kind of got, you know, the branding under control and the online store under control and manufacturing's a bit more streamlined, it's a year of consolidation and kind of working out, you know, how we want to meaningfully grow the business, whether that's, you know, getting more like stockists or getting more like doing more markets or you know, focusing on like architects and designers, sort of getting into that market a little bit more, or inviting people to the studio. And I think it's just a really, I think we're in a really nice space to
try it all.
Yeah. Try out some different things and yeah, see how it goes.
But the scale concept is quite interesting for the two of you because everything's handmade. And so, like, maybe Elle, to expand, can you tell us just a little bit about the process to create, say, your platters?
So each piece is thrown on the wheel. So first, it's quite complicated. You have to weigh them, then you throw them, which is the bit that you see in Ghost, that's throwing. Then you have to wait for them to dry enough so that you can turn them, which is where you put them back on the wheel and you cut away and refine. Then we let them dry completely and we finish them off. It's called fettling. You kind of finish the surface so it looks very lovely. And then you put it in the kiln once, then you glaze it. So the kiln takes about 24 hours to get hot and cool down, except the small kiln. The big kiln takes a few days. Mm-hmm. And then you take them out, you glaze them all, put them back in another couple of days, take them out, polish them all, send them off.
Sounds easy.
That's it.
Yeah. Very simple process.
Very simple. But you just do 10 steps.
Yeah. But like nice. You mentioned to me earlier, like...
You don't just make one.
Don't just make one, but the clay has to have the ideal, like, conditions. So temperature, humidity, you've got to keep checking them, see how that's drying out. So it's an evolving organic product that not necessarily always follows the same recipe card.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's complicated, but I think one of the things that we, I guess, love about the Australian ceramics community is that there is a lot of talent here. And I think one of the things that we would like to do and we're really passionate about is creating a ceramics industry that does take advantage of all this talent.
Mm. Specifically the throwing.
Yeah, because there aren't a lot of businesses sort of at scale that throw all their pieces. And I think it's one of those processes that it does give you that connection to the maker because you do see things like the throwing lines and they're not always exactly the same. I mean, you know, they go pretty close, but they'll never be, you know, you'll never have two pieces that are exactly the same. And I think that's something that's really lovely. And we're kind of now in a position that we can... you know, we've got a new ceramicist starting in a couple of weeks and hopefully another one after that. And we can start building this really lovely community. And a lot of ceramic artists and ceramic producers are female as well. So you're kind of, we're creating like a really lovely community, which is something that's really central to our brand and the kind of lifestyle that we want to create for ourselves and for people that we, you know, employ and they kind of become part of, you know, a community, not just a business.
Yeah. And again, sort of getting rid of that idea that you can be a creative and also do all the business side, just somehow in your spare time, make as much as you need to make a good like living and then also do the market. So you're working every weekend and then you also have to work out your accounting and your insurance and it's kind of we want to create those jobs so that people can do what they love, they can do the throwing, they can spend the time making the products and not, you know, 2 days in the studio and 3 days on admin. Really, because I just find it so much more relaxing being able to be to use my creativity as my skill. It's really as my job. It just means you can focus on one thing.
Mm, and do it really well.
I certainly couldn't do the throwing and the manufacturing.
Oh, I don't know. Well, you've started tinkering, you know, so maybe there's some potential there. What do you think?
Slippery slope. Yeah.
No, I don't think... it's really fun, though, and it's... I think there's something really lovely about... And I think it's probably why so many people take up ceramics as a hobby, is there is something really calming about
captivating.
Yeah, captivating. I personally don't find throwing calming. I think it's extremely stressful. Like
the opposite.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure how people find it relaxing because I've tried and it's really hard. But I can see why people become so obsessed with the craft.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, like, it is, it's an extremely difficult thing to do and to master. Like, it is really, you know, like a lifelong craftsmanship process, I guess. Yeah, and I think creating opportunities for people to be able to master it is really important because, I mean, if you don't, you know, everything ends up overseas or you kind of lose this, like, rich, diverse, like, manufacturing. And I think, like, you really see, I don't know, I feel like traditionally as well, sorry, I'm, like, ranting on about it, but like, traditionally manufacturing and manufacturing jobs, they are communities, and I think, like, you see it in,
yeah, like, manufacturing. They get devalued because when you put, you know, the cost of employees up and it all becomes numbers, often people think, oh, well, make it overseas or make it cheaper, do all these things, and you kind of forget that there's people like it's really nice to be able to work on something. At the end of the day, you have a product.
Mm-hmm.
It's very
rewarding, and I think it's interesting, like, I've read quite a bit about how important it is to have a physical product or something physical from all of your hard work.
Mm.
Because I think a lot of people find that if you are in, you know, in a job that you don't actually see a physical product, you can become, I guess, a bit disillusioned with it. And there's not kind of that, you know, like,
nothing to celebrate.
Yeah, there's, like, nothing to celebrate. And I think that's really important. But I think
it's like, say, when you make the website, you can, like,
yeah, like,
from
you
the
have
outside,
a website at the end.
Yeah,
like,
you finish
you have
with
a product.
Thing. So it's,
yeah,
it still works in the digital space, but it's
it works
not
in the
like
digital space.
Just,
but I think, like, yeah, I mean, part of it is that, but part of it is creating these lovely communities because you do see, like, manufacturing businesses are communities. Like, everyone that works, you know, in, you know, like, you have, like, for want of a better example, like, my partner's in mining and the mining operators, they're like a family. Like, it is a really big community. And I think that's in a lot of manufacturing jobs, that becomes the case. Like, you do become really close because you are working on, like, something physical together.
Mm.
And I think, like,
yes, yeah, so
that's something
tend to get all in their own little studios and then no one works together.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to, like, grow our manufacturing business to be a community of, like, sharing ideas and sharing experience and kind of having this, like, lovely shared knowledge, because I think, like I said, when you become, like, all of these individual businesses, which is fantastic, there's no, like, you lose that sharing of knowledge.
Yeah, and you have to do all the admin.
Yeah,
five times instead of one.
Exactly. Whereas I love the admin, so bring it on.
But it's so much easier to learn, teach someone when you're together. Like,
yeah,
you
yeah.
can explain it on the phone or you could have a process document. But I think if you're collaborating in a shared space or even just checking once a month with other makers in the region, there's that sharing of knowledge that goes on as well. And I mean, one of the biggest trends I've seen through, like, the last 12, 20, 18 months with COVID is there's this real mindful consumer as well. And
yeah, definitely.
They're wanting to buy local. They're wanting to support community. And it's really centralizing around their own communities. So I think what you're doing is quite special and relevant as well.
Mm. Yeah, and that's how we like to shop. We love supporting local and we love...
And you know the maker, you know the story. Like, there's so much more to that piece in their pantry or what they're drinking from than,
yeah,
you know, something they've just bought from overseas that's been mass manufactured. So
exactly. And I think people really like sharing stories of things that they have. Like, I think...
And that's your best marketing, isn't it?
Oh, that's the thing. And I think people love it. And, like, we have these really amazing brand advocates that, you know...
You don't have to ask them to do it. It's genuine.
Yeah,
like,
it's
they're
genuine.
Passionate,
like,
about it.
Like,
they love
oh,
it. So
yeah.
We work hard making the best products. And then...
Yeah. So it's really nice. And, I mean, we do it with products, like...
All the time.
Yeah, like, you have something lovely and someone's like, oh, that's a nice whatever it is. You're like, oh, yeah, this person made it and this is their story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people love stories and connections. And I think products are such a big part of our lives that they should be, you know, special.
Absolutely. I think it was really interesting how you expanded on the whole production process, because I think people don't think of that when they are purchasing the item. So to understand the whole life cycle of that product. So just briefly, like from the time you're throwing to the time it's on your shelf ready to be sold, what kind of window of time are we looking at?
How long's a piece of string?
No, you know, 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Depends what it is. Yeah. But, you know, in summer it can be a bit quicker, but it depends. Yeah, I mean, like the quickest, if you're making something, you could probably push it to 2 weeks, maybe 8 days. Depends which kiln you put it in. Problem is you can't fire anything unless you have a full kiln, so you have to make a certain amount of things before you can fire them.
Yeah.
And because I don't like firing empty kilns, because it just makes me feel bad about the environment, and sustainability is a huge part of our thinking. We like to, you know, I like to wait till it's a nice sunny day to fire the kilns and things like that. So there's a lot of considerations, and sometimes you can't rush the drying, otherwise you get handle cracks.
Yeah, we don't want cracks.
That's the big problem. It's kind of like the more you rush it, and I mean, it shouldn't be rushed. I think that's the joy of the brand, is that it's all about, you know, finding that meaning and connection. And I think things that are rushed kind of detract from that a little bit, because also, you know, we put so much of ourselves into these products that, you know, when we send something off, like, we want to know that we've done the absolute best that we can.
Yeah, and that someone will value it as much as we do.
Yeah.
Which I guess is why we don't discount anything, and because we put all our effort into every piece.
Well, it's just cheating yourself, isn't it? It's just saying that we undervalue your 20 years experience of being a maker and an artist because we're discounting. Like, you've got to actually understand the whole life cycle and your education as well as your time, plus the environmental impact on the kiln. Like, there's so much part of that production schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. So what would you do? Do you do something as a replacement to discounting to kind of draw attention or make people feel special from like through a certain purchase period at all?
Not specifically. I mean, people do come to see the studio and to see like where it's made and to meet us and I guess immerse themselves in the brand and like see, you know, the property and all that kind of thing. And people can make appointments to come and see us. I think the connection is enough that people don't really see it as a product that needs to be discounted.
We also don't do seasonal products.
Yeah. Or seasonal sales.
Sales. It's just, I think also because we design the range to be a forever range and we also make things to order. So people, you know, if we don't have them in stock, we'll make them for you. That means that we don't have a lot of leeway in how much in discounting. Like we value our products a lot.
Yeah. And
not to say that discounting doesn't have a place. It absolutely does. And I think just as we're building, we don't have that luxury of having all this excess stock. We don't have a lot of stock to push out to discount. So it's also where we are as a business. It's not, it's not because we don't think that discount, you know, we like to buy things on sale too. And if we do get to the point where we have a lot of stock and we are ready to do that, then I don't think it's always a matter of devaluing stock. I think it's just a matter of, at the moment, it's not part of our strategy.
Yeah, there's no wrong answer. And like, I think for a lot of small businesses, especially in the creative space or artisans, they refuse to discount because of that integrity and because of their stock. And you know, it's a lot more than just, you know, putting something on sale. Yeah. And plus, consumers can get conditioned as well to only want the discount.
Yeah.
And they're not your lifelong customers either. No, they're just going to take that one-off piece. As you're building a whole culture around your pieces, and so I imagine the longevity of your customer will be a long life cycle. So
exactly,
you know, they might get a piece every year or for a special occasion, but you'll be speaking to the same customers that you met in Paddington a couple of years ago in 5 years' time.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that
sums it up very well.
Yeah, there you go.
It does. Yeah. And then we do a second sale every year.
We do.
Which I think is wonderful
people really
too.
Like that. And I think it's not so much about...
And that's really helpful for us as well in the manufacturing and keeping up morale. because if something gets a little crack in it, it's not quite a first.
Frustrating. Yeah.
It's actually, it's not the end of the world. You don't think, oh, well, what am I going to do with this? Oh, it's waste. Because it's not, because people value seconds a lot. And if that's the only time that they can afford them or the only time that they can pick up a piece, they're just as special as the finished pieces. Yeah. And we collect them all up for that reason. It's like, if you want, if you love our products and you really want them, the second sale is when we let them go. But yeah, not the perfect ones, because they have to make up.
And I think like with the second sale, it's a nice way for people to introduce themselves to the brand, or like, you know, they might buy a couple of pieces, you know, they may not have been perfect, and that doesn't mean they've got big cracks or anything in them. It might just be that they came out a little bit smaller, a little bit big, and you know, it's a nice way for people who, you know, just want to buy like a couple of things, and then, you know, over time they become, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a wonderful idea.
It's quite common in ceramics to sell you seconds, because there's a lot of them. Try not to. We minimize it. We don't have that many, but over a year, it does build accumulate.
And you don't want to throw them out either.
No.
Exactly. Not. I mean, I keep a lot of them. So.
Yeah. We pick our favorites.
Like putting them aside. So
But you'll get to a point as well where you've got enough cups, you know?
Like exactly.
Unless you just want to have a nice display wall.
Exactly.
Is there anything else you want to add in regards to the strategy for the year coming forward that you want to expand on?
I think for us, the way that we position our brand, it's probably more in line with like a, you know, like a furniture company, in that, you know, you may be like renovating your house, and in doing that, then you would buy, you know, you'd invest in like a new dinner set or something like that. So I think the way that we see our brand really aligns with the designer and architect market. And I think there aren't a lot of brands that kind of cater to that sort of bespoke, market, because you can sort of come to our studio, see the range, and then we'll make a bespoke dinner set, for example, for you. And it's not something I think that we're going to offer to purchase through the online store. Like, it's kind of creating that really meaningful connection of, you know, you want a new like dinner set, and so, you know, you and your architect or you and your designer come here and experience, you know, what that will be, and like how that's going to enhance your rituals in your new space. And I think that's something that's quite unique.
Yeah, because I think if you're working with an architect or interior decorator, like, they know your vision, and so you're trying to achieve a result together. So, you know, from actual building the structure of the premises to actually painting the walls and then fitting it out with the right look with the homewares, I think these partners all need to work in unison with one another.
So exactly.
Partner with the right people that have the same vision of yours is quite complimentary.
Yeah. And we're really, I think you don't have to convince someone who understands how important the value of who's made it, how it's made, high quality products, like architects and interior designers. That's their life. They know how, a nicer working or fitting or nicer wood, like, they understand how high quality can change how a room feels. And so they, you know, we don't have to teach them that. Whereas when you're dealing with individual people, you have to sort of teach them that there is a difference between our products and, you know, your $2 Kmart mug. There is a difference. But some people will never get it, and they don't care. And that's fine.
And there's nothing behind that.
So I think this year is kind of about us realizing that this is our product. This is what we make. It's what we love making. We know it will change how you view the world. And we know that it can make your life different in a good way. we're really like proud of our business this year. I don't know. In the past, I've been a bit nervous, and it's been a bit like, oh, will people like it? And now that we've used our products a lot, and we know how to make them, and we know how to make them all match each other, so each set we make are pretty much the same as the last set, which is very hard in ceramics when you don't use molds. From a manufacturing stance, I feel like this year is going to be our year of really consolidating and being sort of really, I'm just really excited. Sometimes it's very hard to make sets of things in ceramics, and it's very daunting, but
I think that's the thing. I think we're kind of going into this year a lot more confident than we have in the past. Yeah. Like, I think we know who we are. We know what we make. We know who our customers are. and it's just a matter of, you know, building awareness and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I think more and more people are getting to know us. And the great thing about being in the Southern Highlands is that, yeah, people are getting to know us, and people say to us, oh yeah, like such and such told us about you guys, and such was raving about your stuff. And it's really quite wonderful.
It's really wonderful when, you know, you've got these undercover heroes talking about your brand. Like, you don't realize, and I get referrals as well, it's like, and you don't even realize, you haven't asked them to, you don't even realize those conversations are going on, and then you hear back, like, oh.
Yeah, like, oh, wow.
Like, doing something,
like,
right?
Yeah. So, well, like, people, like, know who we are. Some people will be like, oh, yeah, like, we, you know, they'll be like, oh, like, what do you do down here? And we're like, oh, yeah, Elf Ceramics. And they're like, oh, like, I saw you guys in, you know, there's, like, a bunch of, like, local, like, regional newspapers and stuff, and there's this really great online Southern Highlands directory called The Fold, and like they featured us a few times, and that's been really lovely. And same with like High Life magazine, which is a local magazine down here, and you know, we talked to them and like, oh yeah, like this person told us about you, and so we want to reach out and talk to you about, you know, what you're doing down here and who you are, and are you interlopers?
I'm really excited to be partnering with the team at Dot Digital as our podcast sponsor. I've got to know the team through industry events over the years, and I've helped some of my clients use their platform. Dot Digital is a cross-channel customer engagement platform that partners with businesses who sell online, helping them to communicate and engage with their customers using personalized email marketing, SMS, chat, and more. In episode 5, you'll hear my chat with Aparna, the head of marketing in APAC for Dot Digital. We discuss what is trending in e-commerce, and in particular, how female-led brands like Flora and Fauna, Sasha's Fine Foods, Kissed Earth, and Adorn Cosmetics have grown their businesses on the platform. Aparna then goes on to tell me just how they became the first and only carbon-neutral digital marketing company and why it is important to them. This is a game changer for the industry, so stay tuned. I would love you to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss this chat nor other inspirational conversations with my guests. I'm proud to be partnering with the team at Dot Digital as they are leaders in the e-commerce industry. They are known and recognized for supporting female entrepreneurs and have created a cleaner future for our people and planet through their actions. I hope you enjoy the show.
And you had an article on Broadsheet as well, didn't you?
Yeah, so we did a really fun class last year. And classes isn't really part of our strategy. And I think it's interesting because in my mind, I'm like, oh, classes, like that's not really who we are. There are heaps of brands, you know, out there doing amazing classes, and there's some really great group studios and all that kind of thing. Even down here, like Sturt Gallery, who do amazing ceramic courses, they're really, really great at that side of things. And it's, you know, not necessarily something that's our business model. But last year, with everything that happened, doing an online class was really beneficial to connect with our customers and also for our own mental health. But it was interesting to be flexible enough in our, you know, vision for the business that we can incorporate fun things like that, that, you know, they do get us a bit of, you know, press, like Broadsheet picked it up, and a, you know, Timeout and like all of these other really great platforms picked it up. And so I think it was interesting, an interesting learning to sort of stay, you know, like know who you are and know you want, what you want to do, but also be flexible enough to be able to add things like that when it's appropriate.
Yeah, but also try really hard not to get excited about things that aren't part of your
and
core
get distracted.
Business. Because everyone, I mean, ceramics, everyone asks about classes. It's the first question you get, do you teach?
And Elle's an amazing teacher. There's no reason at all that we couldn't do classes. But what's been really interesting as a learning over the last few years is that people that do classes are a completely different market to people who purchase product. And I think there's not a lot of overlap. Like I've never really seen anyone that's done a class go on to purchase product.
That's really interesting.
And I think that's probably something
So much our tiny house class, because that was re-engaging existing customers.
Yeah.
A lot of our people who came along had already purchased, and it was kind of a way to...
It was a good time.
And they weren't making the real product. They were making tiny houses out of air dry clay, and it was really a way to connect. And
it was about the conversation and about the catching up.
And people that missed us from Paddington, a lot of people purchased it just to chat, to catch up
all
that kind of thing. But I think it's really interesting that people who make ceramics or do a class, we've done a few bespoke events. The people that come to make the product don't often convert.
So I wonder why. Is it because they like the learning process, and it's not so much that they want to fit out their kitchen and create a space? It's more that they just want that creative outlet and exploration with their hands, because maybe they're doing a lot of computer work or they want that social.
Yeah,
exactly. I think people that that do classes are probably more after an experience rather than a product. And I think there's
I could make this, but more I've already got enough stuff and I don't want more stuff. And so then they kind of put homewares in this category of stuff. And so then they won't buy it. They want experiences. So it's kind of, but our products aren't stuff. They are more meaningful, but people who want to do a class don't necessarily make that connection. So it's also fair enough. A lot of people do have enough stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And they want to do classes that's enough stuff.
And I think it's just an interesting, I find it a really interesting learning from business strategy, because the assumption that I made a couple of years ago when we started working together was that classes are a really good way to introduce people to how ceramics are made, and then from there they'll purchase product. To me, I thought that was quite a natural progression of customer acquisition. And it's really interesting, really looking at it, there isn't that connection. And I think,
it might be more a longer term thread. I know, say, learning under artists, at the time when you learn from them, you can't afford their work really. And then maybe as you progress, maybe you realize, oh, that is actually very valuable. So it's hard to know if it's just a short-term trend as well. But in terms of manufacturing our space, you have to clean everything a lot to be able to do a class, so it completely disrupts the manufacturing. So it's not a matter of you've got all the stuff, you can do a class. It's kind of your studio kind of has to be
either
one or the other. You almost need two studios to do classes as well.
I guess it comes back to your strategy and what you want to actually achieve with the year. Exactly. If you do want to take workshops on as something ongoing, it's about creating that purpose-built space and having a very different style of marketing to attract that type of customer.
Exactly. Yeah.
But your core focus is predominantly on the production of these beautiful pieces and working with designers and architects to actually get that to the right audience as well.
Yeah. I mean, for one of a better analogy, it's kind of you go, it may be very interesting to see how, for example, a Louis Vuitton handbag is made, and that behind the scenes is really lovely to watch and know how it's made and why it is so, priced in the way that it's priced and why it is an artisan product. And then to go and buy the product knowing how it's made, for example. I think our brand, in the same way, it's interesting to see how it's made, but you don't necessarily need to go and make that product to appreciate how beautiful it is when you purchase it.
Yeah.
So I think the making side of it
might be more of our online strategy for the future.
Yeah. I think it could be some good content for you to share. It's more that behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really
hard. That's the content we find the hardest to make. Yeah. Because your hands are covered. Your hands covered in clay. Also, and you're now take the nice photo.
Yeah.
But it's also one of those things, I think, that behind the scenes content that in itself is its own strategy. Because if you look at people like Florian Gadsby, and if you're into ceramics, he's amazing to follow. His whole business is behind the scenes content.
He's also such a good photographer.
But that's the thing, his skill is in...
He's practically a pro photographer.
That's good skill to have.
It's hard, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's an amazing ceramicist, but it's... Yeah. That's a whole skill in itself.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing, and one of the biggest things that I've learned, particularly in the last 12 months and that I want to take into this year, is that you can't be an expert in everything.
Mm.
Like, you don't have the time or the expertise. Like, so for example, in our last photo shoot, the thing that I learned is that I'm not a florist. Like, I can't just, you know, we have a beautiful garden, but I can't just go into the garden and cut some stuff off, and you'll see a few of our photos where I've just, you know.
Especially when you're, you know, you get up, you get dressed, you know, you're getting photos of yourself. We did get a friend to do the
catering.
Yeah. So that was so good, because it's not like Soph's not an amazing cook and she couldn't do it all, but it's that you have a photographer for half a day, a full day, and it's like go, and you need everyone to
kind of work together.
And so it's a stressful day as well, and you sort of have to not just be in the photos, but sort of manage what photos are being taken. What do you need for your website in the next 3-6 months? Like, what are you saying in each product, in each shot? And I found that quite surprising. It was our first big, not just product photography. It's our first lifestyle shoot. And, you know, we styled it all ourselves as well. And
yeah. So it's like knowing where your strengths are and knowing what you need to outsource. And I think, like, one of the things we talk about a lot is knowing when to invest in, like, equipment to do a job versus like outsourcing something versus learning how to do it ourselves. So for example, Instagram is something that has never, like, it doesn't come naturally to me. And to create an Instagram with, you know, a cohesive story and all that kind of thing, for me, is a lot of effort.
Yeah. And you need, you know, we're not professional photographers. We try.
Yeah. And again, we tried for years to do our own photography. And then,
but it's better for us to be making all these products than spending half a day trying to take all the photos.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like knowing when to be like, okay, do we spend, you know, $1,000 on a new camera, or do we spend $1,000, you know, paying a photographer to do our product shots and
take away all the editing and the...
Yeah, and like...
And it is, it's all that other work.
And that low res, the high res. And
like, we have an amazing photographer and who we do our shoots with, Nick DiLorenzo. And he just makes it so much easier. Like, he just came in and took all our photos.
Very relaxed. Brings all the huge flashes and things.
Yeah, like, you have all the gear and stuff. Yeah,
it's good to collaborate with those professionals, because you're building up your own network.
Mm.
Yeah.
And plus, they've got a different vision too. So they can bring something interesting to the table. Pardon the pun.
Exactly.
That you couldn't do on your own, because you're focused on actually making and building the brand. So it's actually good to have that intervention of another mind as well.
And it also makes you like stop and focus, and that the photography day is the day. Like, you can't be like, I'll get to the photography. And it's like, you're booked in.
Exactly. And that's what happens in small business. Like, I can wait. I'll do that post. I'll send an email campaign next week. But then next week you're busy with something else.
Exactly.
So,
and I think
the accountability is very important.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And having that, I mean, I guess like the biggest, beyond like knowing when to outsource, the biggest thing that I found in the last, you know, few months or, you know, 12 months, particularly moving to a new area, if you have really great product photography, like product photos organized really well, when you do get opportunities for press and PR and things like that, you have all of that at your fingertips. And I think that,
because they work fast.
They work fast. Yeah. Like, really, you can't, fast. You know, suddenly spend,
you'll miss an opportunity if you haven't got a media library ready. So
so like, we've had some really great press opportunities, like, so as soon as you get approached, straight away you can be like, yep, here's a link to our, you know, Google Drive, all of our photos are there, high res, low res, different crops,
take what you need.
Yeah. And I think it's just taking out those pain points,
but it makes it easier for those businesses to represent you. So whether or not it's the gallery who's selling your products or if it's a designer or architect, if they want to profile it either in their publications or on their website, you've got all the assets ready. The written content has been written in your voice, so you know that they're not going to botch it up. It's going to be exactly what you wanted. Yep. The photos look how they should, so it makes their job easier to actually publish you. So people like working with easy people. So
totally. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. It's like, and you'll find that you get more opportunities if you're, I mean, it's obvious, like, the easier you are to work with, the more opportunities you'll get, and you'll get repeat opportunities with people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, do we want to talk a little bit about technology?
Yes. We do love tech. Well, obviously Shopify is my number one. And anyone that knows me knows that I'll go on and on and on for days.
That might be a whole podcast. just tell us the main thing that you're loving with Shopify that really helps you with your business. Yeah.
The inventory setting, like the inventory section. So I think it's one of those things that, like for us, because we manufacture, but I mean, even if you're a retail business, inventory is so important, knowing what you have and
where it
how
is.
Many and where it is. And
especially when you're in between Paddington and Exeter.
Oh, if you've got multiple locations.
Even going to markets, it makes it so much easier.
Oh, so much easier. And the great thing with Shopify and having your inventory there, and I always talk about that like single point of truth. With technology, I think it's really, really important to have one place where things are accurate and recorded. And I think the great thing with Shopify and the inventory is that you've got not just the inventory and obviously like all of the product management, but you've also got this function called transfers. And like talking to people at Shopify, I don't think many people use it, but it's a really great way of managing incoming stock. So for us, I use it as like the last touch point from like our manufacturing, which I run through Airtable, which is basically like spreadsheets on steroids. So it's the last point. So the transfer in Shopify is the last point before that inventory then, you know, is live on our website. So it allows us to plan stock runs. You can see like what's, you know, coming in from our manufacturing. But if you're a retail business, it's a really great place to manage incoming inventory from, you know, a huge range of suppliers. And when we were a retail business, that's how I would, when I would place orders with our suppliers, I would immediately put them in as transfers. And then you could see exactly like when product is going to come in, so that when you
are with the long lead times.
Exactly. Like, you know what's coming in.
4 to 6 weeks. Like, you think it's in your head, but I mean,
exactly.
But when you're ordering a big order, it's not 4 to 6 weeks. It's 12 weeks. It's 16 weeks. It's
6 months. And when you've got a team, you need a system that's easy for anyone to log in and just check without having to pick up the phone or run down the back of the shed and just say, hey, how many of these have we got?
Exactly. And it also allows you to, and like for us, pre-ordering is a big part of like our sales cycle. So with the transfers and the inventory management, we can see how many pieces are sold on pre-order and how many are in our making cycle. So, you know, say we've got 20 cuddle cups in porcelain, you know, coming through the next making cycle, but we've sold, you know, 24. We can see where we need to start putting that stock, or like how we need to do our next stock runs. And it just makes planning really easy.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things that's really like undervalued. And I think with Shopify, it's easy to keep adding apps and doing more and more, but I think if you scale it back to just kind of using like the core things that they've done
and do it really well,
it just simplifies it. I think the more you try to do, and it's something that I kind of get bogged down with, is like the more you try to do, the more complicated it gets. And then, you know, you're trying to do more to make it easier for yourself, but then you're like,
how are you managing the pre-order?
So, I mean, it is, because like with manufacturing and with ceramics manufacturing, because we do have our hands in clay all the time, or at least Elle does, things are a little bit more like paper-based. So, I mean, it's
whiteboard-based.
Yeah, whiteboard-based. Yeah, we have a very good whiteboard.
We do have a good whiteboard situation.
Yeah. So between that and through... and through like Airtable and working out like where things are being made.
Yeah, you're never just working on one thing at a time. So it's not like you get one order of plates and then you get another order of cups and you make all the cups until they're done, and then you make all the plates until they're done. You make everything at the same time. So, and if you're filling a kiln, you can't just have plates because you don't have enough shelves for just plates. Then you fill other products that might be out of stock or low in stock. So it's sort of, that's also adds the lead time, because you can't, you know, you can't do a set of 12 dinner plates without making 20 bottle vases. You can't feel a kiln in that way. So it's sort of, it's a juggling act, but we,
We seem to make it work.
We do.
Yeah.
We do make it work, but it,
Because I guess what we do is like with things that are out of stock.
The Shopify lets you do them as,
you can like keep, stock. So you can pre-order through our website at any time. For any product.
I mean, we do find it a bit of a pain point that people don't read the file, don't read that it is a pre-order item. So we're working.
I mean, more and more people are.
Yeah, but that's also something we're working on in terms of involved in that process. That's definitely something that
we want to.
I think
work
we
on.
Can work on more, but and also just sharing the process
it's really
will
fun.
Help with that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But I think the new Shopify pause is great, because then when we go to a market, or if we sell here or we sell somewhere else, it's all drawing from the same
inventory. Stock.
Yeah. You don't have to go consistent. And like, what have I sold? Or if someone buys something online, you don't accidentally sell it
again
at the same time. Like, it's real time. It's great.
I think it just makes like having a really great system like Shopify to like under sort of support. It's kind of, I don't know, I see it as like the foundation of our business, because obviously without Shopify, you know, that's like a whole, you know.
Yeah, I think from an operational perspective, it's the foundation.
Yeah.
But also from a customer perspective, it's the home base. So exactly. All your marketing, it's all drawing back to that website, and that's where they learn your story. They become part of like the branding, and then they actually go through the whole shopping experience as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, actually, I did Shopify 2.0 on all of our pages. Oh my gosh. So we're so lucky. Elle's fiance is a programmer, and he set up Shopify 2.0 on our site. And it was like Christmas. It was so exciting. So now on each, it was like the last piece of the puzzle with Shopify and with, I guess, the interface that customers see. Like, the reason that we originally selected Shopify as our platform was all of the inventory backend system, not necessarily for the front end display. Yeah, because it wasn't the easiest, it wasn't super easy to customize. You do kind of need a bit of, to make them look really, really professional. Hmm. It's like anything, to make anything look professional, you need a little bit of help. But to get
that more personalized.
Yeah, but with
bespoke look, you need a developer.
Yep. Exactly, but with
luckily our developer does a lot of Shopify work now.
He's become really the expert.
Exactly, yeah. But I think the Shopify 2.0 and having the like each like collection page and product page is now like the home page, which is much more, you know, that
design layout.
Yeah, you can do more, you can add more, you can add. Mm-hmm. So to each of our products, we can add more about the product. We can add, you know, behind the scenes information. We can add more of the imagery and how it's used. And I think it just helps tell the story of the products.
And I think for your brand, because you've got a very limited product range as well, I think it's really good that you can actually profile each individual product with additional photos and content within that storytelling.
Yeah.
Because it complements the fact of what a person would experience if they actually came into the retail space.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you can see how like a dinner bowl looks with a breakfast bowl. You can see how, you know, a vase looks with another size of vase, with flowers, without flowers, with tiny houses. Like, you can kind of start to really understand how the products work together, because they're not really products. I mean, obviously they're products you can use on their own, but it's a lot of them collection. Like, it's like, yeah, you do build these collections, and it kind of shows you like how to build the collections.
Yeah. And I think also starting from a physical space, that consideration of what would we have told someone who comes into the shop? We do see our website in that way. Like, what little story would we have told about the tiny house? We put that on the tiny house page, and it's very
personal.
Yeah, it's personal. And I mean, some people don't love it when they walk into a shop that you suddenly tell them all about all your products. Lots of people love it. Some people just want to browse.
I think people get surprised. But that's, and something that I found really surprising, because I was in our retail store, you know, every day for a couple of years. And I think people are surprised at how much they enjoy that connection. I think people kind of go into stores thinking like, oh, like, I just want to look at the product. It's just about the product. But then, you know, I'll talk anyone's ear off, and, you know, then they sort of learn about the products and, you know, like why we design them, why we, you know, in the way that we do, and the sizes that we've picked and the materials that we've picked and the manufacturing, you know, the way that we manufacture things. And I think people then connect with the product so much more. And the thing that I was really, really worried about in moving to an e-commerce platform is that we were going to lose that. But I think if anything,
it absolutely gained it.
Yeah, I think people actually resonate more because they can read about every single product. They don't have to sit in the store and, you know, listen to me talk
and
through,
they're busy,
you know, yeah, like talk places through every product. They can actually kind of see, like, and they
on
get
their
that
own
same
time.
Yeah, and they get that same consistency of story. So like anyone that goes on, you know, for example, to the, you know, dinner plate page, or dinner bowl page, will know that, like, I love making fresh pasta, and that's why we have the dinner bowl, because it's, you know, great for that. And, or you'll go into the breakfast bowl page, and, you know, we have porridge in breakfast bowls every morning here, and, like, that's why
you make me hungry now.
Yeah, or like, you know, we drink flat whites. That's why the cuddle cup is a flat white size.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like,
do you know what I mean? What
like,
else?
Yeah, what else? Like,
we love
like,
flowers.
Yeah, we love flowers. We love flowers. But like, or you know, if you go to the Budvars page, it loves to
the Budvars was our newest product.
So yeah. Yeah, but that was designed because Elle loves the garden, and she loves, you know, going and getting like one beautiful rose or beautiful, I don't know the name of any plants, but she does. So she'll go and do that.
Mostly
and she'll
roses,
put,
to be honest.
Yeah, like she'll put like one flower or like, you know, some lavender or...
Oh yeah, or rosemary, things like that.
Yeah, or like fresh herbs. And so it kind of get this like really nice. Lovely...
Yeah. Effortless.
It's effortless. Yeah, it's just effortless.
Yeah, it's just great.
Or like, beautiful. You know, I could go on about it for all of them, but and I think as well, it's not like with the products that we have, even though they're named for specific purposes, because that's what we had in mind when we designed that size, you can use them for anything. And I think as well, the product pages lets us tell that story that, you know, you don't just use, you know, the extra small bottle vase for little flowers. Like you use it for fresh herbs in the kitchen and, you know, that kind of depth of, you know,
yeah,
storytelling.
People tend to be less creative than you think. I mean, you do it. I do it. I do when I go into shops. I'm like, what do you use this for? But then for some reason, but then on the website, you just show them what you use it for. You use it for all these different things.
And people want to be inspired to get the ideas too, because they just don't think of it. So I think allowing people to view that in their own time through the website Instagram.
We got a text message with a picture of our bottle vases all lined up as a centerpiece at someone's Christmas, and they were like inspired from the website.
That's amazing.
It was really cute.
So that's the biggest compliment you can get.
Exactly. And like with the extra small bottle vase, one of my best friends, she was like, what do you use this for? Like, I just don't get it. And she's one of our biggest fans. And I actually met her in the store. And anyway, and so I was like, oh yeah, we put fresh herbs in it. And then she's like, oh, I better get a couple. So she got a couple and she took them home and put all her fresh herbs in and sent me a photo. And she's like, look, I did it. It's fabulous. It's that real sense of, I guess, playfulness as well with our products that you can use them for anything and, you know, be inspired. And yeah, it's a good time.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah,
just having a good time.
Yeah. Well, it's good because it sounds like Shopify 2.0 has really complemented your brand storytelling. So it's given you a lot more control to really display everything really well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's easy enough. It's easy now to add images or, you know, change images or, you know, add, you know, pieces to it. And we've added like the review sections and all that kind of thing. And I think it's... it just gives you a lot more control over that storytelling. And I think, you know, the more and more people shop online, and I think people will continue to shop online.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
I was just going to say the storytelling, you know, making an effort with good photography, well-written content, like all these things are trust factors, which help people feel comfortable buying from you. And because your products are like higher ticket items as well, like this all kind of gives them, you know, more confidence to actually buy directly online from you. So.
Exactly. And I think as well, like sort of telling the story of, while we don't have a physical store, because we do have a physical space where people can come and see, even like if they choose not to, or they're not in New South Wales, it gives that kind of credibility to the e-commerce store as well.
Mm.
But I mean, it's not necessarily something that you need.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's good.
Yeah.
And Elle, so tell me, what's your favorite business tool?
Oh, it has to be my wheel. I have a beautiful silent wheel, which is a far call from the old chunky, loud throwing wheels that you used to have. And I just love it. It just means that we can create our pieces in such a calm environment and we have such a beautiful view. And because we work together and Soph works on the computer, I don't think she would appreciate a big...
Whirring wheel all day.
Screeching wheel going round and round and round.
Yeah, and you turn them off and it just if you work in a room with lots of them, you turn them off at the end of the day and you don't realize how loud they've been all day.
It's just like a sigh of relief.
Yeah. It's very nice.
It's good that you've invested in a quality tool that's gonna make your life easier and more enjoyable too. Because you're using it nonstop.
Yeah, and you can also make them taller so that you don't hurt your hips and things like that, which is quite a consideration. Yes, ergonomic.
Very important.
Yep. You can stand, you can sit. It's very helpful. And, you know, you don't want your main thing to break. So it's very nice to...
Yeah, well, you know, you're spinning wheel as your left-hand man or woman. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. And probably the last question I'll talk about is just around mental health. So we've had quite an interesting, I think it's probably the best polite word to use for a very challenging 2 years in life and business due to the COVID pandemic. But also running a small business is hard. You know, there's so many different things that you always have to think about and try. And so it can become a very stressful time. So, like, I always think it's funny to kind of think about my business and how if I knew then what I know now about business, I probably would never have started.
Yeah, but, same words have come out of Seth's mouth before.
At the same time, I think about it now, I would never change it.
That's
like, I love where I am. Yeah. I would do it in a heartbeat. So exactly. I just wanted to know just like, how are you protecting your mental health and just staying focused and motivated with so many
variables,
all this kind of turbulent moving climate that we're in at the moment?
Yeah, it's a really good question. It is interesting. I feel like so many small businesses or people that have small businesses would say the same thing that, you know, if you knew how hard it would be, would you do it?
Mm.
It's like, no, but would you do anything else?
No, definitely not.
Yeah, absolutely not. Like, you know, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. And I think there are so many things that, you know, motivate us to keep going. But at the same time, there are so many challenges that we face that, you know, you do really need to overcome, and there are things that you do need to set in place to protect your mental health, because, you know, you can work 24 hours, 7 days a week, and I think
especially when you're in that zone of passion, like you're in the zone, you're feeling great.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things that's definitely put out there by social media and you know, things like that, that if you have a small business, to be successful, you do have to
work
all the time. And I think that's a bit of a fallacy, because you need to give yourself space to sit and reflect and think and sort of understand and give your brain time to recover and, you know, make the connections to you know, to be able to progress your business and all those sort of things. And so for us, and like we talked about it before, is setting really, you know, not super strict, but like firm boundaries around work, particularly because, you know, we are sisters and best friends and we hang out all the time and we could just talk about business, and we do. But I think having, you know, certain breaks and having weekends and having, you know, a lunchtime and having morning coffee and having, you know, a set start time and an end time and, you know, having holidays, having days off when we need to have days off. And
really also thinking about how our business fits into how we want to live. You know, you're a lot happier at work if you've done the thing you wanted to do on the weekend, or if you've gone to the dinner that you wanted to go to, or you've, you know, it gives you this, or, you know, if you keep the regular meal times, you feel better when you're at work, you get stuff done, you don't procrastinate, and just always to remember that
there's always
it is what you love as well. It's easy to be like, oh, I'm just working all the time, but remembering that you don't actually want to do anything else is really,
yeah.
Also, that you don't have to do everything all now. It's, you know, telling a customer that, you know, you were optimistic in your deadline and that hasn't worked, and just being honest with people about things like that. I mean, ceramics makes you very accountable to. If you cut corners, they don't work. Mm. If you try and dry them too fast, you lose all the handles. It's just something that happens sometimes. And then you look back and you think, I really, you know, I'm really disappointed now, but I really need to remember that just not to do it next time. And it's...
Yeah. There's something that we learned as well through... we did an incubator with Sydney Uni last year. And they, every week or every fortnight, I think it was, you had to reflect. And so they would give you a series of questions, and it would be, you know, what wins did you have in the last 2 weeks?
Like, what could you do better? What do you need help with?
Yeah.
And it really made you realize, like, oh, I, you know, we achieved a lot, like, in the past 2 weeks. And, you know, this thing might have gone wrong, but and we might be really focused on that thing that went wrong, but in fact, all these other things went right. And maybe the thing that went wrong, we just need some help. And then you start isolating, like, what do you need help with? And how can you bring other people in to help you with it? And who do, you know, you start thinking a bit more creatively about how to fix things that aren't working so well. And instead of just, you know, beating yourself up for not preempting something that went wrong, you can then reflect and make that next week's win.
That's awesome. Exactly. You turn like something that, you know, you see as a loss or as a setback into something that can be really positive. And I think as a business owner, business is so deeply personal. And I think it's really difficult for people to get feedback. And I think it's one of those things, like feedback is so important. But it's also being humble enough to ask for help and knowing that you
can. The raw honesty is really important, and you can actually build, you know, good respect from the people that you're honest to. And when you reach out, so it's definitely been a learning for me in business. Like, I often joke that I think I'm 3 years behind because I never asked for help. So,
yeah. And I think as well, particularly with women in business, building those communities and being vulnerable and asking each other for help and being supportive is so important, because business is hard enough. It's even harder being a woman in business and backing yourself and supporting yourself, that I think we should, you know, all be there too.
Yeah, we're not really in competition with each other.
No, exactly. No, not seeing it as a competition, but seeing it as an amazing community where we can all share knowledge and help each other.
But think of it from the other perspective. Like, if you could see someone struggling to do something and you know the answer.
Yeah, you want to help them.
You don't care. Like, they think they're embarrassing themselves by asking you, but you don't care. You just want to help them. If they can save 3 weeks in a process because they're not rushing and they've got a different process, like, you'd rather give that gift. So.
Exactly. And I think sharing that knowledge it's not giving away like a competitive advantage or something, because I think, you know, replicating someone's business is, you know, impossible. But I think it's by sharing knowledge, it kind of helps everyone. And, you know, you get perspectives from people that you wouldn't have had. And often it's something that's like quite obvious to someone else, but you've just not framed a problem in that way. Or yeah, it's just really, really fascinating. And I think recently as well, we've had some really great, like female mentors. So it's been really nice.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So I guess to protect your mental health, the key is just, I can't even summarize it now.
Cover. So boundaries, I think, is really important.
Boundaries. Like, setting boundaries. Yeah. Taking breaks.
Taking breaks. Knowing that, Elle's favorite mantra, which is, you know, you can do everything. You can't just do it all at the same time, which I think we heard from
you. And you also don't have to do it now.
Yeah, you don't have to do it now. There's always going to be more work. And so giving yourself space, it just means you'll be more productive and less burnt out, because it's so easy to get burnt out as a small business.
Space to think, but also reflect and learning to ask for help.
Yes. Yeah. Ask for help.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Have regular coffee breaks.
Not too many.
Not too much coffee, but you know, have regular breaks and
maybe just go for a walk, get outside, get off the computer, phone down.
Yeah. Get off Instagram.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Something I tell myself a lot.
Well, that was amazing, ladies. Thank you so much, Sophie and Elle. Like, I've just learned so much about your business and process. Aww. And I think you've got a lot to offer, both with your knowledge and inspiration as well. What's the best way people can reach you?
Through our Shopify website.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, elfceramics.com.
And our Instagram.
Yeah, through our Instagram.
Elfceramics with a PH.
Yeah. Yeah, if people want to talk about the business side of things, you know, give us a call. My phone's always
careful when I
during business hours.
Phenomenal.
You can find all our emails and everything on the website.
Feel free to reach out by email, or
you can find all our products there too.
Exactly.
And you're also on LinkedIn as well, aren't you?
Yes. Reach out on LinkedIn. I'm not very good at LinkedIn.
So I'll add all these links in the show notes, so people can actually look that up directly when they want to. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's really fun.
I wish you a really creative and productive year ahead. And I know you'll address all those goals that you've got, because you're very determined women, and it's quite exciting.
It is exciting.
It's really exciting. We're
so excited to see the rest of your podcast.
Yeah.
To the rest of your podcast. You know, you're number two, so it's the start of something really fun, I think. Yeah. So I think, you know, there's a lot to offer, and I hope it inspires other people just to start a business and to, you know, stick together with their goals and just find inspiration and knowledge when they need to.
Yeah. And just remember to back yourself, because I think that's most of what it is, isn't it?
It's confidence. And it's about having the right networks as well. Yeah. And that comes over time. You can't rush that, and you find your own networks.
It's not rushing. Just
doesn't have to happen now.
Yeah. Step by step, and surround yourself with people that support you. I think that's a really key thing, because you just want people that are, you know, your biggest supporters.
Yeah, you know, it's whether it's business or just your own kind of time out, like, you just need good people that are going to make you feel energized.
Exactly.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to our show today. Please share this with women you know who would benefit in hearing our stories and want the knowledge, inspiration, and connection to build a business that they love online. If you love what you've heard, please rate this podcast with a 5 or leave a message in the comments below. Just like giving a review on a retailer's website, your feedback gives us credibility and helps more women discover us. If you would like to connect and engage with a community of like-minded women in business, head over to the Shopify Women's Network on LinkedIn.